Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Tony. Hello, I'm Fay Williams, your host, and welcome to Celebrating Truth. We've got wonderful guests coming up in this hour, as usual. Every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring to you great personalities and information you don't often hear on mainstream media. Today we're going to be talking about the death penalty and whether or not it has any place in a civilized society. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, the number one organization dedicated especially to the needs of black women and their families. We are delighted to bring Celebrating Truth to you every week. Check out our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. You will find information of the National Congress upcoming event in the Metro D.C. area. First, we have the annual scholarship golf tournament to be held Friday, October 14th at the Langston Golf Course on Benning Road in Washington, D.C. If you'd like to be a member of a team or just attend the tournament, let us know by calling 202-678-6788 and let us know that you'd like to play or come by. You may sign up to be a member of a team on www.nationalcongressbw.org. And you will find great photos of a First Lady, Michelle Obama, and Sojourner Truth as the First Lady unveiled the memorial for us, making Sojourner Truth the first African-American woman to be honored with a permanent memorial in the United States Capitol. When you come to Washington, D.C., stop by the Capitol Visitors Center and see Sojourner Truth. Yes, we celebrate women and all of their achievements, but we never forget also to celebrate the works of men and young people who are making life better for all of us. We invite you to support our efforts by being a member of the National Congress or becoming a donor to some of our great projects. Again, just go to www.nationalcongressbw.org, where you can donate, you can sign up for the scholarship golf tournament coming up October 14th, or you can become a member of the National Congress of Black Women. If you're in the Metro D.C. area, you're also invited to join us at Arena Stage on October 23rd to see Trouble in Mind. With the beautiful stage right in our neighborhood, we often see great plays together. To join us for that, just call 202-678-6788. That's 202-678-6788 between the hours of noon and 4 p.m. Eastern Time. There are a lot of awesome things going on in our community. We have to celebrate our own truth because we either get left off mainstream media or too often find ourselves denigrated. I'm sure you'll agree that our great stories are not always told, so we hear them well when we hear the African proverb that tells us, until the lions begin to tell their story, tales of hunting will always glorify the hunter. We encourage you to tell your story on Celebrating Truth because nobody can tell your story better than you can. So let us know if you have a story you want to tell here on Celebrating Truth. Call us at 202-678-6788. That's 202-678-6788. Or email us at info@nationalcongressbw.org. That's info@nationalcongressbw.org. And we'll be happy to help you tell your story. We've just gone through a horrendous month of executions in the United States. And most of us are still a bit in shock over the execution of Troy Davis down in Georgia. There was so much doubt about his guilt or his innocence, and many of us are still wondering, could this happen in our country when we lecture so many other nations about barbaric actions? Today we have two brothers who are going to talk with us about capital punishment. Our first guest is Brian Evans of Amnesty International. He's a campaigner for the death penalty abolition campaign. And Dick Gregory, internationally renowned civil and human rights activist, long opposed to the death penalty, and just returning to Washington, D.C. from the funeral of Troy Davis, who was executed last week in Georgia. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
God bless. Good evening. And thank you for this opportunity to speak to people these days after when emotions have kind of calmed down just a little bit. But before I go any further, I say to my brother and to Amnesty International, thank you for being there, not just on this, but a long time ago. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, it's not the easiest thing to be for because of the type of emotions that we have. And there's a lot of people that would like to come out publicly, organizations, companies, but they can't come out because how would it affect the sale of their product? How would it affect grants and stuff for organizations? So for you all to be there, solidly there, where we can pull in, where we can hook up, and the great part about all the information y'all have, if somebody was writing an article and didn't know where to get stats, they could easily just call Amnesty International, and they're there. So again, I say to you and all the people that's been there for so long, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And, of course, that was Mr. Dick Gregory. And we're going to go now to Brian Evans from Amnesty International.
Well, I certainly appreciate those words. And we started working on this in 1977, which is the year United States restarted executions. And down at the funeral, which it sounds weird to say, but the good fortune to attend because it was such a powerful event. And everybody knew that this was not the end of a story. It was the beginning of the end of the death penalty. If we can continue to work the way we have, we've got a whole lot of people who are ready to, you know, come out of the closet, as it were, and really step forward and work to end, finally get this thing out of our country.
Beautiful. And I think what you're saying, you know, makes so much sense. And for those of you who's in doubt and you haven't been out there or hearing about this 24 hours a day, this was probably the most important step in the history of capital punishment anywhere on the planet because of the fastness of the communication, because of all the independent radio stations and TV stations now. So you don't have to depend on a CBS or NBC or ABC or a radio that depends on advertising. So what I think can happen now, I'll be 80 years old my next birthday, and I you know, now let's go back. When I was born, there was no television. Movies was white male, white women. Jews didn't get a good break, although they owned a lot of the production. A Jew couldn't be a leading man. Gay, my God, don't even mention that. And so I'm saying that to say this. As a little Negro child in St. Louis, Missouri, rigidly segregated city, I saw no white folks. I went to black school, black church, black restaurant, so everything. And when I go to the movie, for you young folks out there that's not don't understand what I'm fixing to say, in those days, one of the big powerful movies was a death row scene. And none of your big actors could consider themselves made it if they didn't play one of them scenes. And so as I grew up, I'm thinking nobody got the electric chair but white folks. I mean, I didn't see nothing. I mean, nobody discussed it. And then a priest, imagine a little child in the movies, and the last person you saw walking with the person going to be strapped in is a priest. So how could I think there's anything negative with that? If this was just as horrible as, I didn't know it's horrible then, but how could I believe it was horrible when I see this priest walking, asking him, praying, asking, can I do anything else for you? And so now it's a different ball game. And let me just say this. I've always felt, because there were some times when Phil Donahue and some of the talk show hosts was trying to get some family to agree if the state would to let their loved one who's being executed be filmed and run on TV. And a lot of people felt, and I did too, if the world could see that, it might stop it. But what happened to Troy Davis will have more impact on eliminating the death penalty than filming someone dying, because if you film me dying, you don't hear the side. You don't hear the evidence. The whole world, it's amazing. You walk down the street today and you say Troy Davis, and everybody knows who you're talking about. And I'm sure that's the same thing on a worldwide level. And so what we have now is the first time in the history of planet Earth that we have enough information out there now, if we can put all the groups together and talk about eliminating, doing away with it altogether. I think this is the best time in the history of planet Earth because of what happened with Troy Davis, but that the information got out there. The information got out there about the evidence. The information got out there. And then when you have, you know, an ex-president, the ex-head of the FBI, when you have the Pope, when you have all of these people that's saying something's wrong with this case. And so I think with that, we'll have a much easier job of turning this around now than we ever had before.
Well, Brian, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think he's absolutely right. And what we've done now to sanitize executions is to have this lethal injection. So it's like you're putting your favorite pet to sleep. And getting the information out is absolutely critical, not only to show that the system is screwed up and makes lots of mistakes, but to show that they're killing a human being. He's not just a prisoner with a number who's connected to some terrible crime. He's a human being with a family who helped his sister walk when she had MS and helped his nephew go on to, you know, get a job in an aerospace company before he even goes to college. He's a real human being, and people, even, you know, pretty cold people are a lot less comfortable killing a human being than they are killing just some abstract number or, you know, some nameless people in a village in Pakistan that we fire a drone into or something like that. So the key to stopping all kinds of state violence, I think, is really to show that the people on the receiving end of it are human beings and to tell their stories. And I think that's what was successfully done here by a wide variety of groups and people, and most especially by him and his family, and his sister Martina, and then Kim later, when Martina got, she's very ill, as you know, with breast cancer, they were able to tell his story and turn him into a human being. And people in this country are not so cruel that they want to go around killing innocent people, and they don't even want to kill human beings, period. So really, the key to turning this thing around is to get that information out there. And previously, they've been successful, I think, the states have been successful at making this look like a nice process with a priest and a lethal injection table, and, you know, everything is, you know, peaceful and quiet, and the guy committed a terrible crime. But now it's been sort of, the facade's been ripped off. We know what it really is. It's the deliberate killing of a human being.
Well, Brian, why do you think so many people, other than television and having access to more information, why do you think people like former President Carter and Judge Sessions and Mr. Barr, Congressman Barr, and so many other people got involved in this case? I mean, this is obviously not the first execution we've had.
No,
but
it's not.
Why did so many get involved in this one on Troy Davis?
Well, there's a couple of things. The sort of high-profile William Sessions, Bob Barr types, they are uncomfortable with that. They're not uncomfortable with executing, but they're uncomfortable with executing innocent people, and they want the justice system to perform fairly and accurately. Some people, it's possible they are even worried that this execution might hurt the death penalty. They may have wanted to stop the execution because they don't want to do damage to the death penalty because this execution is such a horrific miscarriage of justice. But the other, what we saw in Savannah with over 2,000 people coming to the church and the thousands that rallied in Atlanta, there's a lot of grassroots organizing going on down in Georgia. People with the feet on the pavement, people knocking on doors all summer long in Savannah, getting signature sign. There's a lot of low-tech stuff that went on in this campaign in Georgia and elsewhere around the world. A lot of people just putting in a lot of time and effort. And then, you know, when the execution date came, the Twitter and all that sort of helped to escalate things. But there was a lot of, for getting a million signatures or whatever, there was a lot of really hard, old-fashioned work going on. And then there's a certain amount of, or a certain segment of conservatives who do believe that our justice system needs to at least be fair and accurate, which, of course, isn't a lot to ask.
Now, speaking of fairness and accuracy, it seems that there was a lot of doubt in this case. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, as you said, many of these people being opposed to the death penalty, but you think the fact that there was so much doubt as to his guilt or his innocence that this brought so many people into this case.
Yeah, I mean, on a practical level, yes, that we don't want to execute people when there are doubts about guilt. That's kind of common sense. But at a deeper level, people have lots of doubts about our criminal justice system for a lot of reasons. The fact that we have 2 million people incarcerated, we have more people in jail than China does. You know, the fact that because of DNA testing, we know that there's so many people have been wrongfully convicted. So people are much more skeptical of the criminal justice system than they used to be. So I think it's bigger than just the doubts. In this case, people are having doubts in general about whether the system can get things right, which I think is why we're seeing lower death sentences and a real, I think now, a lack of enthusiasm for the death penalty, except maybe in some places, in some sectors of our society. But it's declined, I think, because doubts not just about his specific case, but about the system in general.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host, and you're listening to Brian Evans from Amnesty International, a campaigner for the death penalty abolition campaign, and Dick Gregory, internationally renowned civil and human rights activist, long opposed to the death penalty. Now, Mr. Gregory, I know that you also participated in many other situations where you were trying to prevent people from being executed. How is Troy's case different, or does it make a difference to you? Are you just totally opposed to the death penalty?
To me, it makes no difference, but I think a lot of people that I know, his case would make a difference. You see, when I was against capital punishment, I still had a gun in my house. And so I had no problem with the state giving someone who commits some type of crime a million years in jail. That's punishment. When you talk about killing, that's revenge. And if the three of us was on the front line of battle in a foreign country, and we fighting as Americans, and we trying to kill some people, they trying to kill us, and if we win, our country takes over their country, and yet if we get captured, they cannot pull our teeth out with some pliers. They cannot give us electric shock. So if we have these type of rules for that type of battle, not only am I trying to kill you, if we win, you lose your country. And yet, in America, if my mother was a drug addict and all kinds of crazy things, she lose the right to tell me as a son, you don't have a right to get drunk. You don't have, and that's America. America, the two losers in this Troy Davis case, America and the one loser and the one winner. America lost, China won, because we no longer, as you said before, we no longer have the moral authority to say to China anything about their human rights. That's what we lost. And so consequently, when the state or the government, and then as a Christian, I do not understand how we Christians can cry over the crucifix of Christ and be for capital punishment. Christ wasn't mugged to death or run down by some drunken chariot driver. Christ was killed by the state. And so we can go and sing the song, "Were You There When They Crucified the Lord?" That was 2,000 years ago. You wasn't there then, and most folks wouldn't be there now. And so I'm not against capital punishment because, sometime the wrong person is convicted. I'm not against capital punishment because sometime if you don't have enough money to get a good lawyer or if your DNA wasn't available, I'm against capital punishment because killing is wrong. I'm not against capital punishment because if you have money, you probably won't get it. Simply killing it, down to that. Simply killing at a state level, have to stop. And when you talk about the industrialized nations, all of them except us, have done away with capital punishment. I mean, are all them other nations that wrong and we this right? And so, again, you know, a lot of people's been out there for a long time, but the Troy Davis case was what we call a good case. It's one that is hard. I made a statement at a press conference and said, if I was a cop, I would be embarrassed about he hadn't been killed yet. And so when I was there with the Troy Davis rally in Atlanta, it's just something that was in the air. I've been in thousands of demonstrations all over the world. There was something in the air with the, and that's how you know as Amnesty International and all the people who put together have really worked this one and gave people a comfortable evidence. You know, there's a lot of people could be for capital punishment, but they wouldn't be. They can't come out and say it because they father. Well, if you kill a cop, you should get if you do this here. And this one, this information out there made a whole lot of people comfortable by coming out publicly and saying this here is wrong. A lot of them didn't say capital punishment wrong. This one is wrong. And so I just feel that within the next year, first, we got two things to do. As we fight to do away with capital punishment, we also have to fight to clear Troy Davis's name. That's very important, because once that happened, then a lot of the folks that wasn't there said, oh, wow. And then a lot of folks that went out on the line and said this shouldn't happen will be vindicated, too. And so I would just hope as we, one of the things that I decided to do is midnight start a liquid fast for 1 year. And it's easy for the date because Troy Davis was executed on the 21st of September, which was the first day of the fall equinox. And so I'm going to go a whole year just drinking nothing but liquid and asking people at 12 noon, wherever you are at 12 noon, just when I say ever, I mean whatever time belt, 12 noon, your time, is just meditate and just ask that the truth come out. Now, let me tell you what's interesting in this meditation. We're not saying, oh, God, vindicate him. Oh, God, let the world know he did. We're not asking that. We're saying for the truth to come out. And that means the young cop that was killed, I mean, his mother, she has the right to be bitter. She really feels and believes that Troy Davis did it. But she should join us in the prayer. Because why would a mother get satisfaction if the wrong person was killed? And that means two people, your son and the one they accused of doing it. And so all we're asking people to do is just pray that the truth will come out. And when that happens, you're going to see the world do a different thing, because all you have to do is shine the light. Shine the light, it wipes out darkness. And so again, just a show like this here, you know, how many people will hear this and say, wait a minute, I didn't realize this. And so again, I just feel that all my life, when I started getting any sense, that killing by the state was wrong. And like I said, when I came out, I actually had a gun in my house. I didn't see nothing wrong with going to the war. I didn't see nothing wrong with certain types of killing. But again, and so again, I cannot say to Amnesty International, you know, a lot of people got to hear you and feel you this time because the news of this here. But God, when we think about how long Amnesty International been out there pulling and saying this, I mean, it's almost kind of fashionable now. But back then, my God. So again, I just say thank you. And I'm going to publicly say to you, anything that Amnesty International need me to do on this campaign, do not hesitate. And then we got to say hats off to the NAACP. Mm-hmm. We have to say hats off to the NAACP because my grandmother, I mean, she never heard of Amnesty International. She lived way back then. She's heard of the NAACP. So when the NAACP and Amnesty International is working together. My grandmothers don't even need no facts. If the NAACP with them, they must be all right. And that's what you were saying you felt down there in Georgia and in Savannah, the lightning, the electricity that was there. And then the people that was working, we didn't work because we had hidden agendas. That we weren't trying to stop capital punishment because we wanted to kill somebody. We weren't trying to stop. And another thing, and it's funny that Whitey Bulger, and for grandmother who don't know who he is, he's a mob thug out of Boston that know he was responsible for killing 20 people. What the press didn't tell you is 90% of those was African-Americans that he killed. We know he shot his girlfriend in the head on a street in her head, and the blood ran for a block. We know that he hired two FBI agents that was on the FBI. They tipped him off when the federal government or the local police, and they was even murdering people for him. Now, those two FBI agents is in jail. Now, they didn't get capital punishment. They did not get capital punishment at all. And Whitey Bulger, they caught him after 16 years running. And he will not get capital. Not that I want him, but I'm just saying when you sit and look at the fairness. And so to my brother, Amnesty International, can I ask you one question that had nothing to do with what we're talking about?
Sure.
When a person break out of jail and get away, why is it called they own the lamb? I mean, has that got something to do with an animal?
I do not know.
Miss Faye Williams.
And from what I have read, Mr. Gregory, and now that you brought up Mr. Bulger, I'm going to skip over that for the moment, but a systematic racial bias in the application of the death penalty exists at both the state and the federal level. We're going to go to a break in just a moment, but when we come back, Brian, I'd like for you to address that. Is that your understanding? And
sure,
what can you do about it? We're going to a break, and we'll be right back.
Now back to Celebrating Truth with your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Corey, very much. And, of course, before we go to you, Brian, to respond to Mr. Gregory's question about on the lamb, which is on the, L-A-M, lamb. It just means on the run. It's a fugitive who's making a hasty departure. So that's what it means. It comes from the Shakespearean days. It has no other particular meaning other than beating, like beat it. Or the lamb, means beat it. That's all. So now for that, and it's slang at that. It's not a real word, but we hear it often. And Brian, back to the question that I asked before we went to break about, from what I heard, there's a systemic racial bias in the application of the death penalty in both the state and the federal level. And what do you think about this?
Well, I mean, the bias in the death penalty exists because death penalty decisions are very political because they're always high-profile cases. And nowadays, in the old days, you know, it was just blatant racial bias, and the majority of people executed were African-American, and the vast majority. Nowadays, the decision to seek death is taken by a prosecutor who's elected, and, you know, so he generally seeks it when the victim is someone who's of more sort of value to the society, and that tends to be white victims or wealthy victims. So you see a situation where about three-quarters or more than three-quarters of executions have been of people who killed white victims, even though African-Americans are victims of at least 50% of all homicides. And then there are some states like Mississippi or Pennsylvania where there's sort of still a blatant kind of the majority of people on death row are African-American, even though it's totally disproportionate with who commits crimes. So the bias is still there, but it's part of a bias that's inherent with capital punishment because it's so political and so politicized. And it's also, you know, there's a racial bias in everything in this country and certainly in everything in our criminal justice system. If you look at the race of the vast majority of judges and prosecutors, most of them are white. And even when it comes to jurors, it's better than it used to be. But the whole system has a racial bias to it. But in the death penalty, it plays itself out in this political way because prosecutors have total discretion to decide whether or not to go for a death penalty, and they will go for it if there's political pressure to do so because the victim is a more, you know, wealthy or a member of society, which they tend to be white, of course. So that's how it sort of gets into things. So there's definitely a real bias. It's not based on which is the most heinous crime.
And, you know, now that you're speaking of prosecutors, to their credit in reading about the death penalty, there are several prosecutors who do not favor it, several law enforcement officials who do not favor the death penalty. I was reading, for instance, about the governor of Michigan, who happens to be a Republican, and he is, you know, Michigan long ago abolished the death penalty. In fact, they...
Very long ago.
More than 150 years or so ago.
They were the first English-speaking jurisdiction in the world to abolish the death penalty in 1847 when they became a state.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the governor of Michigan, Mr. Inglis, said, I think Michigan made a wise decision 150 years ago. And he went on to say that, you know, we're pretty proud of the fact that we don't have the death penalty, adding that he opposed the death penalty on moral and pragmatic grounds. Do you find that that is the reason most people give, or do they have different reasons? Does it have more to do with the doubt, you know, in killing what may be an innocent person and you're not being able to undo it?
I think in states, people tend to favor, the death penalty is not at the top of their list of priorities. You know, they worry about the economy and their jobs and the wars and all that. So people tend to just go with the status quo. So you'll find in states where there's not a death penalty, people tend to say, that's fine, we don't need the death penalty here, and then take the moral high ground. And then in states where they do have the death penalty, people will favor it and make a moral argument that, well, we need it because it's for the victims. Most people don't think about it that much. But for prosecutors in non-death penalty states, I think that they see what goes on in other states, and again, they see how the death penalty just takes the politics of a criminal justice case to a whole new level, and it infects the system with politics, which is really bad for the whole system. Because then you're making decisions based on, you know, what's your career move, and is that judge going to give to your campaign next, you know, in some states where the judges and the prosecutors are all in the same political party, you know. So there's all these politics in it, and I think there's a lot of prosecutors in non-death penalty states who are glad they don't have to participate in that nonsense.
Now,
Go right ahead. The big myth that exists, because I was shocked. I knew there were certain states that didn't have the death penalty. I was shocked to find out how many states do not have the death penalty. I mean, there's a lot of people out there think every state in America, you know, have the death penalty. But anybody know what the breakdown is?
There are 16 states without the death penalty. Three have passed. New Jersey, New Mexico, and Illinois abolished the death penalty in 2007, 2009, 2011. So now we're up to 16 states, plus Washington, D.C. doesn't have it, Puerto Rico doesn't have it, none of the territories have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a third or a quarter, or I don't know what it is mathematically, but it's It's right, a lot of yeah. states anyway.
Well, you know, what I notice is that most of the states that still have the death penalty or southern states, have you noticed that same thing?
I have indeed noticed that, yes. I mean, it's not a surprise, really. I mean, the death penalty is a legacy of trying to control lynching instead of having lynchings happen in every individual county. They used to carry out executions in each county. In the 20s, I think it was the 20s, a lot of places like Texas moved all executions to Huntsville. It was actually an effort to try to, you know, get control, have the state take control of the process of killing people instead of giving it just to anybody. So there's a legacy that goes straight from executions to lynching to slavery. It's just sort of a legacy of, and I'm from the South, so I can be critical.
Oh, well, so am I.
It's a legacy of a sort of a culture, a very punitive kind of retributionist kind of culture where if people hurt you hurt them back.
Okay.
Part of the old time religion and all of that. That may not exist. Yeah, it may not exist in, you know, Lutheran parts of Minnesota or other part, you know, Catholic parts of the Northeast where they don't have the death penalty. So it's part of a long cultural tradition, and the South is the center of that. Even though actually most death sentences now take place in places like Phoenix and Las Vegas and Los Angeles, not in the South.
Mm. Can I ask both of you all a question?
Mm-hmm.
Where did the myth come from that, you know, that death penalty is a deterrent to crime, and when you look and start doing the research, it's just the opposite? Where'd that myth come from, and how do you crush that and let people know that that's not a legitimate fact?
Well, I think that people think, well, you know, I personally wouldn't kill somebody because, you know, I don't want to get the death penalty. So they're sort of thinking it from their own frame of mind. Most people commit murder are not thinking rationally or clearly.
Yes.
And the way to counter that, I mean, I think there's a general belief that there's not really much evidence. Even among supporters of the death penalty, they don't try to argue too hard. A few people do, but they don't try to argue too hard that it's a deterrent. And just because the evidence isn't there, the states without the death penalty have lower crime rates than the states with it. There was a study recently where I think 88% of criminologists said that the death penalty is not a deterrent. That's sort of the same percentage of scientists who say that global warming is real. So it's pretty strong consensus.
And there again, Brian, I think that's a case for educating the people and organizations.
Absolutely.
Amnesty International can play a big role in getting at this and teaching people, you know, because people make up all kinds of things to justify what they want to believe. But when you get down to the bottom of it and you do real studies, you find that it isn't true. And I know all of my reading says that it's not a deterrent to crime for the simple reason that many people who commit crimes do it as a crime of passion or, you know, it's an impulse, a quick impulse. So they don't think about the consequences of what's going to happen to them. So that's really not a legitimate reason.
Yeah. One argument we like to make is that the best deterrent to crime is a punishment that's swift and sure. And the death penalty is neither, because most people don't ever get get the death penalty. People sentenced to death are usually not executed, and even if they are, it takes 20 some odd years. So, a jail sentence that's swift and sure. For instance, in California, where they're pursuing a ballot initiative to abolish the death penalty in 2012, which will be quite a political effort, 40% of murders per year go unsolved. You can't have a deterrent if you don't solve 40% of the crimes that take place.
Wow.
So you really want to take your resources that you're spending on, you know, capital prosecutions and solve these crimes. And that would be a much better deterrent if you thought you were going to get caught.
Well, you know, I looked at the states with the most executions, and I found Texas by far at the top. Do you think Governor Rick Perry will tout that as a badge of honor during this presidential campaign? That his state leads with so many executions.
He may, but I don't think voters care that much about that. You know, what's he going to do to get me a job? Or you know, that's what people are going to care about. And if he does that, he's in trouble because at least one of those people, Cameron Todd Willingham, was almost certainly innocent. And he was convicted of starting a fire that killed his three children, which it turns out that the forensics were totally bogus, and the fire was probably an accident, so there wasn't even a crime. And Rick Perry had that information in his hand when he decided to allow the execution to proceed. So if he does that, he's going down a dangerous road.
Let me ask another myth. The reason I say myth, because I remember all my life from the movies, when you get arrested, you have one phone call to make. So I've been to jail so many times, and it wasn't until I went to jail to find out that's a myth. That one phone call is not in the Constitution. I want to ask, is this a myth? All my life I heard that people who have mental problems, I'm being nice now, they say crazy people who would kill somebody, they can't get capital punishment. Is that true or is that a myth?
The Supreme Court said, I don't know how many years ago, you cannot execute the insane. But they did not say they didn't define insanity. So states continue to execute people who are severely mentally ill to the point where, you know, they don't understand that they're being executed. There was one man who was executed, I forget, it was Arkansas or Texas, who didn't eat his last meal dessert because he said he would come back and get it later. He didn't even understand what was happening.
Wow.
So that still continues to happen. It's a real, real shame because, you know, people like that, how is that, you know, retribution or it's not even vengeance because these people may not even know they committed the crime. They don't know why they're being executed. So you're not supposed to execute the insane, but the definition of that has not been
right. I was thinking with what you said, it probably has something to do with intent. It's like consent. You know, if you're under a certain age, you cannot consent.
Right.
If you're
culpability, right.
Mentally ill, you know, you have no intention to do it, so that element cannot be proven.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go to another question, Brian. Are there other capital cases that may be on the horizon? And if so, tell us a little bit about them. I know we've concentrated a lot on Troy Davis, and rightly so, but are there other cases like that out there?
Well, I mean, Georgia is scheduled to execute another man on Wednesday. his date was set the day after Troy Davis was executed, the morning after, really, when I guess a lot of people weren't paying attention. He was convicted almost exclusively by witnesses who did not see the crime. They just saw him there sort of before and after. There's almost no physical evidence tying him to it. They've discovered some biological evidence on Friday. I think they found it in a police station. So his lawyers are trying to get the execution stayed so they can test this evidence for DNA. So we'll see if Georgia executes somebody when there's evidence sitting there that hasn't been tested. I don't know whether they will or not. But one of the big cases that's coming up that we've been working on and wrote a short report about is the case of Reggie Clemens. I don't know... If you've heard of this, it's a St. Louis case.
Yes.
And he was convicted of killing two white girls who fell off a bridge or were pushed off a bridge into the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who originally confessed was their white cousin, and then he retracted that and pointed his finger at Reggie and a couple of other guys. And on the day that Reggie Clemens was sentenced to death, this white cousin received a huge settlement from the city for police brutality, which was an interesting timing. And Reggie, of course, was also beaten by police to the point where the judge presiding over his arraignment ordered him to be sent to the emergency room because his face was so swollen. So it's a case with a lot of problems in the investigation, and he had a terrible lawyer, a couple that were divorcing at the time they were representing him. So it's a case with a lot of problems. There's doubts about his guilt. There's definitely some serious racial issues involved in his in the investigation and the prosecution of his case. And he has a hearing in March ordered by the Missouri Supreme Court, which was good on them to take a second look at the case. And we want to raise a lot of awareness and get the information out there about his case the way we did about Troy Davis so people know, you know, what the state of Missouri is trying to do in a case where just the system failed from top to bottom. And we will be in St. Louis a couple times working to try to raise awareness about that case in the coming months.
Well, sure. Be sure and keep me in touch with that. I worked on that case. We marched and passed it and many years ago, and then I didn't hear anything about it no more until, I guess, a couple of months ago. I think the mother called me, or a friend of the mother called me.
Yeah.
And so whatever, that's my hometown. So I love to be part of that whenever you all get ready to make a move there.
All righty. Well, we'll definitely keep you in mind.
Please do.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Gregory, we have had some calls thanking you for your involvement to date on that case. So I appreciate you always being there, and you know, you're the wise sage, and you've always got this great advice for all of us. After seeing the cases like Troy Davis, where there's so much doubt, what would you say to a person who still supports the death penalty?
Well, we haven't convinced them. And then you just got a lot of people that just, they know no way. You know, when you take people like the three of us that's been out here, that's seen all kinds of everything, and until all of these cases start getting all this big attention with DNA, there was few people that understood what goes on behind the headlines. It's a horrible murder, and then all of a sudden someone is caught. And in our subconscious mind, we kind of like to put all that away. And so now, and that's the good thing about the Troy Davis case now, and when we go into St. Louis, there's more people going to pay attention to that if this evidence don't get turned over in Georgia. I mean, I'm learning something now that I didn't know. I did not realize that you could set a date this close to the time it's going to happen. I mean, I had no idea.
Only Georgia does that.
Because these people been on death row for years. And then, I mean, this person found out, you said last Friday?
Well, it was the day after Troy Davis was executed, so the 22nd.
That was Wednesday.
Yeah. Right.
And then it's coming next up already. Time. Well, do the lawyers have enough time to?
Well, yeah, Georgia has 14 days. No other state does it that fast. It is really tough for the lawyers.
Incredible.
Now, in either of your experiences, do you see that people who support the death penalty tend to be people who've been victims of crime or have loved ones who are victims of crime?
Well, I mean, my experience is that people who support the death penalty do so for, you know, understandable reasons. They're afraid of crime, or they want the victims to get justice, and that's what we usually hear 90% of the time. We need to, and we've already talked about how it's not a deterrent, and so we just need to get that information out there to address that fear, and we need to get the information out that it's not good for victims to spend all this time on a few capital cases when we're not solving half the murders that are committed. So if we can make those kind of arguments to people who support the death penalty to address their concerns about safety and about the needs for victims, I think we can really soften, if not change, a lot of people's minds about
the
death
penalty. And one of the good things about what you all are doing, you know, 50% of everybody alive in America today was not born when King was killed. And 70% of all the people on the planet was not alive when King was killed. And I'm saying that to say you have all of these new people that's coming that know nothing about the old. And so do you know how many people for the first time listened to the Troy Davis case and didn't come in with no preconceived anything? And that's what we have going for us now. The amount of people that's here, and like you say, once you tell them, once they educated to the fact of, you know, that the victims, what a better way to help the victim's family than to say we're going to spend money to create different technology, give money to various areas that don't have the right tax base, and see if we can bring this homicide capture down, like in California, 40% of the murders?
40% each year, yeah, average.
That's incredible. And so, again, I think we have a different day now. There's a new mentality out there that, when I was a little boy, nobody discovered DNA by then. And so just the thought of the people that is totally vindicated that would have been dead now had it not been for DNA and a handful of people that dedicate their life to say, this is not going to happen.
Well, it's kind of mind-boggling when I look at the states with the most executions, like Texas and Georgia, and New York prior to 1976, California prior to 1976, and North Carolina, Florida, South Carolina, Ohio, Virginia, and Alabama for the top 10. But what is even more incredible is that you look at, since 1976, when the death penalty was reinstated, that Texas still has this incredible number of 379 executions, Virginia, you know, behind them being in second place with 98, and Florida in third place with 64. All of these are places, you know, we love to go. And it almost makes you think that you shouldn't go to those states just in case you committed a crime, because the execution rate is so high. But again, I guess it says that if you're going there to commit a crime, you probably wouldn't be thinking about the consequences.
I mean, and it's all relative. You know, there's, you know, 50 executions a year in this country, but there are 15,000 murders. And even in Texas, where you might have 20 executions a year, they're, you know, the vast majority of them are not going to, a lot of them won't be solved, and most of them won't end in executions. So, I mean, Texas does execute more than other states. It's bigger than the other southern states, of course. But executions are still, you know, compared to the vast, like over 90% of murders do not end up in a death sentence. It's still kind of a symbolic sort of ritual of human sacrifice to show that the state has power to kill prisoners and the state is in charge. It's not really a criminal justice policy. It's more about an expression of the state's power.
And we're just about out of time, but before we go, Brian, I'd like for you to give the website for Amnesty International for those who might like to learn more about what your organization does or how people can reach your organization.
Our organization's website is www.amnestyusa.org. And if you want to go to the death penalty information, you just put slash and abolish after that first part, and you'll go straight to death penalty.
Okay, and everybody knows how to reach Mr. Gregory and me. I won't have us give ours out, but you know how to reach my organization. Let me just say that it's been great talking with both of you. You have so much information, and I thank you so very much. Would either of you like to have a brief closing statement?
My statement is just thank you. Thank you for shows like this. Thank you for organizations like Amnesty International. Thank you for joining and the NAACP and with Amnesty and Al Sharpton and all the other. But again, thank you for Black Talk Radio. I mean, that information, it just went around this country. It was incredible, the amount of people that was talking about, and it was incredible with that information, the amount of people that didn't think it was going to happen, like me. I'm standing out there in Huntsville, Texas, where they just executed Burr for the hideous crime, and we realized, well, we lost this one. And then we hear, wow, Troy Davis got a stay, and we were so happy that had happened. And then 15 minutes later, somebody made a mistake, and it just kept seeing. But I'm saying the interest that was, it was like a sports game. It was like a Super Bowl, 2 seconds left, and it's tied. And that's the way people felt. And I think with this, we can use this and shine a different light on it with all the new recruits out there now that nobody's ever explained this to them.
Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that this is a moment for us, and it's on us, groups like ours and NAACP, to make sure we don't lose this moment, and that we are really aggressive about making sure that people who joined us for this will join us for the next case, and we'll go into states like Maryland and Connecticut and California and Kansas in 2012, where they might abolish the death penalty in those states, and just get involved locally in your state, and in their efforts to abolish the death penalty in the state legislature. Some states are going to do it pretty soon. Others will, you know, take a little longer. But everybody should get involved locally in addition to getting involved in cases like this.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for sharing that information with our listeners. And to our listeners, I know our members are looking forward to seeing all of you at our scholarship golf tournament on October 14th. For tickets, listeners may call 202-678-6788. That's 202-678-6788. That is for tickets or for attending the luncheon or playing. In the Metro D.C. area, we also have a big gospel extravaganza coming up on Saturday, October 22nd. Check out the details at www.nationalcongressbw.org. And to our listeners, we encourage you and all of your friends to please join us as members of the National Congress of Black Women. When you look around your community and you think about community service at its best, we want you to think that's the National Congress of Black Women, because we are truly women making a difference. So join us by calling 202-678-6788 or going to our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. We're here every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you missed any of our shows, just go to www.artistfirst.com. All of the shows are archived. Just click on Celebrating Truth, and that will take you to the page where you can hear our archived shows. We in the National Congress of Black Women just completed our 27th annual awards brunch in Washington, D.C. And what a great time we had. Thank you for all of your support. Plan now to be with us next year when we again meet in Washington, D.C. the Sunday, September 23rd, 2012, the morning following the Congressional Black Caucus. We have a lot of great information, so check us out on our website at nationalcongressbw.org. Take a look at some of our projects like College for Kids and Young Ambassadors. Read some of my weekly news articles as well as firsthand information from the White House. Again, thank you to our listeners and our guests for spending this time with us on Celebrating Truth. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and CTruth at CTruth Producer, and join us on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com and type in Celebrating Truth. You'll find us there. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. And remember to check out the National Congress of Black Women and the great work we do around the country. That's it for Celebrating Truth. We'll see you next week. Invite your friends to join us every Monday, 6 p.m., and have a blessed week.